Today's podcast session is supported by Upheal. So if you ask a therapist who's doing clinical work what the bane of their existence is, usually progress notes are in the top 1 to 2. I'm not naming any names, but when I was doing clinical work, I remember I had several colleagues who would get so backed up on clinical notes, so they would end up spending their nights and weekends trying just to catch up. Honestly, who wants to do that? And this is where Upheal comes in. Upheal is AI-powered case notes. Now, I know for many of us, when we hear the word AI, there's like a natural skepticism. And honestly, I had that skepticism as well until I got to meet with the Upheal team and learn about some of the many ways that they are doing this in a way that is HIPAA compliant and also doesn't sell data to anyone and also protects our clients as well. You can learn more about Upheal and the awesome work that they're doing in the world by going to sellingthecouch.com/Upheal. And Upheal is spelled U-P and then H-E-A-L, all one word. And at checkout, be sure to enter the promo code COUCH25, C-O-U-C-H, and the number 25 to get 25% off your Upheal plan for the first 2 months.
Welcome to the Selling the Couch podcast, where our goal is to help you achieve your counseling private practice dreams. And now, the man who drinks warm water with lemon when podcasting, psychologist and podcaster Melvin Varghese.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to session 13 of the Selling the Couch podcast. So today's session is going to be a bit different than our typical sessions. Now, we'll continue to have guests on the podcast, but today's going to be a solo session. You know, I love to teach, so I'll be doing more of these solo episodes in the future to help you learn some of the different components of building a presence online. I'll be sharing a lot from my own personal experience of building the Selling the Couch podcast and blog, things that are working for me and the things that I'd wish I had done differently. So I literally started with an email list of 0 people. I had 0 listeners on the podcast and me and a handful of friends and family visiting the website, but it was like so low numbers. And just to give you a big picture overview, I did a soft launch of the Selling the Couch blog in February of 2015, just to make sure that things were working okay and just to do some kind of pre-launch things. And then I went fully live with both the podcast and the blog in early March of 2015. And I'm recording this on April 6, 2015. So it's literally been like right at exactly a month. So fast forward to this month, and here are some of the numbers that I've had so far. So right now I have 207 folks that are on the Selling the Couch email list. I've had 1,193 visitors to the website, and these visitors have viewed the website 3,275 times. The podcast was downloaded 2,870 times since it launched exactly 1 month ago today. So overall, really fantastic numbers. Today, I wanted to take you behind the scenes of what it's been like for me in the last month, and really since last October when I went into high gear with launching both the podcast and the blog. I'll share 5 lessons that I have learned from building the Selling the Couch podcast and the blog. I'll be mentioning a few tools along the way, but don't worry about writing any of it down. I'll put everything in the show notes, which you can find at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 13. So relax and let's get started. So the first thing that I learned is the importance of creating an avatar. Now, if you've never heard of an avatar is basically a description of an ideal person that you want visiting your website. So you want to give them a name, what's their age, their gender, where do they live, what are their hobbies, what keeps them up at night, what are some of their fears or concerns. And you want to take all of this information and write just a very concise paragraph about it. So I'll read an avatar that I created for the Selling the Couch blog. Here goes. Meet Michelle. Michelle is a therapist who dreams of owning her own private practice. She's fed up with working for employers who don't value what she has to offer, pay her way too little, while making her commit to things she doesn't really want to. Night after night, she lays awake, fully aware that she's living someone else's life, and life on someone else's terms instead of her own. So that's just a part of it. And so creating an avatar is one of those steps that seems really silly when you're first starting out. You're like, okay, now I gotta create a name and a what? That makes no sense. But to be honest, like looking back, it's been one of those foundation building blocks that I didn't realize was so important until now. And I can honestly say that I reference that sheet now almost every day when I think about guests that I want to have on the podcast and what type of content that I want to produce on the blog. Even the language of the show notes, you know, I'm constantly thinking about Michelle, my avatar, when I am writing my show notes. So a well-written avatar page, think of it almost like a lighthouse, right? It gives us a guide of what type of things that you should be putting on your website and the language that you should be using. Now, a lot of times, many folks who are getting started with a website or blog make this mistake, which is that they try to create a website that tries to speak to everyone, but that's way too general. But here's what I've learned. If you try to speak to everyone on your website, you end up speaking to no one. So on your private practice website, think about who you want to speak to. Are you using language that they can understand? Are you addressing concerns they have? Or is it too general? The second thing I wanted to mention was the importance of building an email list. Now, if you look online and you come across any kind of a marketing expert, they will inevitably tell you, build your email list, build your email list. And so I read a couple of these articles, and to be honest, I had a really strong reaction. I don't know. It was like, I don't think this could work in this niche, or it seems very impersonal, like sending a newsletter. I mean, who's going to read that? And, you know, how am I going to stand out? Those kind of things. But I think there's a lot of wisdom in what these folks are saying, and that's what I've learned here in the past month or so. So here's one major reason why. If you're trying to build a community on social media, the problem is that community is now really under the control of that social media platform. For example, think about MySpace or Friendster, huge social media platforms some time ago. But where are they now? Can you imagine all of the people that try to build a business through Friendster or MySpace? As soon as those companies shut down, their entire audience was wiped out. You know, I even think about like one example that I had. So I was pretty early on Facebook. In fact, I got Facebook, I think, about 1 or 2 months after it went live. So I was one of the folks that got Facebook when it was only eligible for someone that was in college. So I had to put in my college email address, and then I was able to access Facebook. So Facebook early on, when you posted a status update, all of your friends could see your status update, right, and interact with it. So essentially, anytime you posted something, it was 100% guaranteed someone, at least someone, was going to see it. Kind of fast forward, and if you have looked at any of the trends with any of these social media platforms, like Facebook is still the very big one, but you will notice that Facebook engagement has lessened over time. So what that basically means is that when you post something on Facebook, everyone doesn't see it anymore. And in fact, Facebook has all of these, they call algorithms, and they actually have a terminology for it, but they have these algorithms that try to determine whether your post is worthy of being seen on someone else's wall. And so they have all of these ranking factors that they try to incorporate. It's actually called Edge Rank. This is a real challenge for folks that have a Facebook business page, because Facebook is meant as a social media platform, and it's not exactly fit for businesses. There's a lot of things you can do if you're a business owner on Facebook, but it's primarily built as a social media platform. Even this past December of 2014, Facebook came out and basically said that if you have a Facebook business page, one of the best ways to make sure that everybody on your Facebook page sees it is to actually pay for ads and pay for, you know, distributing that content. I read something like the average Facebook post on a Facebook business page gets only like 1 to 3% engagement. So think about that, right? Like if you have 100 likes on your Facebook page, it's likely that only 1 to 3 of those people will see it. Even I noticed that on the Selling the Couch community page, you know, we're approaching 200 members now on that page. And any given post, like 20 to 40 people will probably see it, which is better numbers than, you know, what Facebook is saying. But it's still low numbers comparatively, which is why I think email is different. Everyone that you send an email to, that email will land in their inbox. Now, the key to getting people's email addresses is to give something away that's either addresses a pain point or makes people so excited that they'll want to give you their email address in exchange for that item. So for me, for example, like I did some research early on and I realized that no one had created a tax write-off checklist just for mental health private practitioners. So I did some research and took a little bit of time and created it. You know, I wanted to create something that people could use throughout the year to see whether something could be written off or not. Now, it took close to 18 hours to research and write it, but now it's become the resource online for mental health private practitioners who are thinking about anything pertaining to tax write-offs. Side note, if you're interested in downloading it, you can check it out at sellingthecouch.com/tax. The third thing that I wanted to mention was the importance of running analytics on your website. So all that means is trying to get information about who's visiting your website and what they do when they get there. I recommend two programs. They're the two that I use. The first one is a free one called Google Analytics. It gives a lot of helpful information, like how many people visit your website, how they actually find your website. So just to be clear, you're just getting numbers. You're not getting something like, you know, Joe Smith, who lives on 123 Sunset Boulevard, came to your website at 12:02 a.m. and did this. You're getting more like numbers, right? Like, this is how many people came to your website on this day, and this is how long they stayed on each page. This is how they found you. This is how they accessed you. For example, you know, how many people came via a smartphone versus a laptop, right? Something like that is huge, because if your website is not optimized to be able to be seen on smartphones, then people may be leaving your website and you don't even realize it. I'll actually leave you a link to see if your website is optimized for search engines. Starting actually at the end of April, Google is going to require that websites be optimized for smartphones, and it potentially, it's still a little unclear about the implications of it, but it potentially means that your website could rank lower in search engines if it's not optimized, but I'll leave you a link. The second piece of software that I recommend is one called Crazy Egg. There's another program from Sumo Me, from Noah Kagan, who was one of the people at Facebook, and then he decided to leave and has now created his own company. But Crazy Egg's been around a bit longer, and it's about $10 cheaper per month. So it's about $10 a month versus $20. You don't need this right when you're starting out, but I'm a big data person, and I found Crazy Egg to be very helpful for me. So Crazy Egg gives you a visual representation of what people do when they get to your website. So for example, where are people clicking on the most? How far down the website do they actually go down? And so it gives you all this information. So for example, if you're figuring out that a lot of people are clicking on the top right of your main website, that gives you a lot of information. There's a lot of eyes in that area. So that's probably where you want to put your best content, so people engage with that content. As far as Crazy Egg, I just use the lowest tiered plan, which runs about $9 a month, and it's paid annually. The fourth thing I just wanted to mention was it's really good to have visual components for everything that you create online, especially on your website. When I'm looking at my analytics, my most shared things are actually the artwork that I create for each podcast episode, which, I mean, it's surprising and it's not surprising because, you know, what we know is the general trend in social media is that across all social media and across all posts, the posts with photos or some sort of visual component tend to get much more engagement across all social media platforms. And it sounds like, just based on, you know, some early results, I'm getting that same trend on the blog. So I would really think about how you can incorporate visual components to your private practice website. So I use a free program called Canva to create the artwork for the podcast. Think of Canva like Photoshop for people who don't like to use Photoshop. It's a much more user-friendly thing, and it's very easy. They have like templates already set out, so you can put in whatever text. It's just very easy to use. Definitely check it out. This is kind of related, but include social share buttons on or near those visuals that you create. So social share buttons are those buttons that have Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, whatever it is, and they're on most major websites now. I use a program called Monarch. It's from Elegant Themes, and I really like it a lot. It gives me a floating social bar, which is, it just floats on the left side of any article that I post, and I can control on what pages that it shows up and where it doesn't. But it also gives me social buttons on every visual thing that I have on the website. So any picture that I have, there's a, as soon as you hover over it, the social buttons that I want pop up. It's really handy. So why is something like social sharing important? It's an easy way for visitors to share your website content with others. Social sharing is also really good for search engines like Google or Yahoo. So from a search engine perspective, social shares means that a website has authority. And websites with authority are much more likely to come up higher in search engine rankings. The fifth and final thing that I wanted to share with you is that building anything online takes time and effort. You know, I feel like sometimes we see these like crazy stories of, you know, how someone's built like 100,000 followers in a couple of weeks. Those aren't typical. And I'm a big fan of the build everything slowly, build it with intention, build it with trust and sincerity. I think when you're doing things in a way that is respectful and honorable and slow, I think it benefits both the website visitor, but also helps you because you're making sure that your website's not growing too fast. You know, related to this, I think one thing that I completely underestimated was the amount of time that it would take to create a blog and a podcast. To be honest, I don't know what I was thinking. I had some rough estimates, you know, and thinking, but especially in the first couple of weeks, I think I tried to do too many things at once. And what that left me was just feeling really burned out and just irritable all the time and just someone that I'm usually not. And my wife started noticing it. So I would just say, when you start to develop an online presence, really take your time, focus on one thing, and get really good at it, and then just move on to the next thing. And over time, and as soon as you can, put actual systems in place. So see building your online presence as a marathon or at least a series of short sprints. So maybe this means that you set aside time each week to producing content for your website, some time for planning, some time for creating visuals, some time for social media. But the key is that way you know when there's time dedicated to working on something. Otherwise, what was happening to me early on, and I think this happens to a lot of folks, trying to build a website or a blog, it's very overwhelming. And there's, at any given point, there's probably 20 things that you can do, but just going from one thing to another, it's going to be very scattered and you're going to get overwhelmed really quickly. Whereas if you have a system in place and you say, okay, this is sort of what my weekly schedule looks like, then you know that you have time allocated to working on that thing. And then the equally important thing is when you're not working on that thing during that time, you don't have to expend mental energy trying to like figure out how to incorporate that thing in. As I wrap up, I hope you enjoyed today's session. Like I said, I want it to be a solo session, and I wanted to give you kind of a behind the scenes look at some of the things that I've been doing. So as you've been listening to these episodes, I know this is session 13. I don't want these podcast sessions to be just a mental exercise for you. Like, I want you to take action on these things. And so that's what I'm creating this whole podcast and this blog for, is that I'm trying to take things that are, you know, in technical language and trying to put things in a way that's easy to understand, but then that ultimately lets you say, wow, that seems really cool and I can do that. And I want you to take action. So the other thing is, look, you're going to make mistakes and that's okay. Like, I cannot tell you the number of times that I have made mistakes through this whole process, whether it's been on social media, whether it's been blogging, whether it's interviewing folks. Like, you're going to make mistakes along the way, and that's okay. The thing I've learned is, I think when we get to this point where we create something and you make that leap and you make a mistake or something doesn't go the way that you planned, you'll find that you have something inside of you that will be able to be flexible and will be able to roll with the punches. Yeah, and that you'll find that there's just something creative inside of you. This creative energy will come out and will help you figure out what you need to do next. Thank you, everyone, for listening to today's session. Show notes for this session are at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 13. Have a great week, everyone, and I will see you next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in the quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.